You're listening to Super Action Bros, a podcast talking about movies with explosions and car chases. This movie has both of those.
Car chases.
Just, you know, there's a lot of chasing of cars.
And Austin Powers, the first appearance of Austin Powers on
Man, so good. We watched Baby Driver.
That's Hello, everybody. Yeah, Ryan's very excited. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Super Action Bros.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Ian. We watched Baby Driver. It's kind of our completion of our heist movie month, but we also are moving into December now that it's December. And this is a movie Ryan really wanted to see
because
he loves Edgar Wright.
I do. Not just me.
Now he's seen it. I saw this movie in theaters because I got a free movie ticket, and I was like, there's no other movie I would spend the free movie ticket on. Absolutely. I also enjoy Edgar Wright. It's one of the founders.
So you didn't even pay for this movie?
No, I didn't. But I got. But that being said, the theater paid for it. So
Somebody changed hands. A write down was done.
Yes. So welcome to Super Action Bros. Now we'll be talking about that movie. Before we do, we want to let you guys know about how you can reach out to our show. Easiest way to do that is to go to our website, stuffandthingsnetwork.com. Go there, click on the Super Action Bros artwork, and you can listen to all of our older episodes on there. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can also reach out to us via social media. We have Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, Letterboxd, and I feel like I'm missing one. Instagram. That's the last one.
Yeah.
And you can also email us, too. Or you can reach out to us individually, I should say.
Yep.
So you can reach out to me, Ian, at iRich. That's at iRitch.
I'm on Twitter also and lots of other social networks. Ryan Roop, RyanRuppe.
You can also email us. There's a contact us button on the front page of the website. Click on that, fill out the form, shoot our show an email, and we'll read it here on the show. So all of that at 7thingsnetwork.com. So,
yep.
So,
hi.
Baby Driver.
Man, I was so excited to finally see this movie.
And?
And it lived up to the hype.
All right, good.
I mean, like, not to give away the whole show. But
I
loved
it. This is going to be a love fest, you guys.
I thought this movie was fantastic.
Yeah.
It is not perfect.
No.
But what is?
Yeah.
Nothing is.
It's a great example of like, to me, it's like Edgar Wright has reached the next level to me. Like, I love Hot Fuzz and I love Scott Pilgrim. I love all the Cornetto trilogy, but this feels like he's doing something different.
It feels new. It feels, yeah. It feels like a step in a different new world.
To me, it almost feels like what if there was an Edgar Wright movie, but also there was elements, we sprinkled in some elements of like Tarantino. Mm-hmm. We sprinkled in like things like that. Like I really felt, especially with the music choices too. I know even music choices, you know, who else directs music? Scorsese directs to music. Like it feels like Edgar Wright where he's like, and I'm going to try a little of this and a little of that. It's like getting your favorite burger and being like, you know what, this time I'm going to get some grilled onions on it instead. You know what? I'm going to add some extra ketchup.
As far as I can tell, this is the first movie that Edgar Wright has both written and directed without a writing partner.
Yeah.
And so in that way, it is more his own than really any of the other stuff he's done.
That's true.
The only movie that he hadn't written with Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, is Scott Pilgrim, which obviously was based on Brian Lee O'Malley's comics.
Right.
This one is all him.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the people who made this movie,
sure.
And then we can talk about
the
theory of the auteur and how this falls in with that
and
where it fits into Edgar Wright's oeuvre and other French words that we can throw in there. So obviously written and directed by Edgar Wright.
Yes.
He's that guy who made Hot Fuzz and a bunch of other movies. He's good at movies.
Very good at movies.
Besides that, there is the cast.
Mm-hmm.
So the number one person worth mentioning on the cast is Ansel Elgort, whose name is just...
That's a great name.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
He is the main character. He's in The Fault in Our Stars. He's in The Divergent Insurgent.
If you're a teenage girl,
are fans of his.
This was not a new actor to you. I'd never seen this young
man. Yeah. No, I guess he has like a public persona that is somewhat douchier than his character in this movie.
Oh, okay.
But I think he...
It's a pretty good Southern accent for not being from there.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, he's from America.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not...
He's from America with a name like that?
Yeah, he's from New York City, so, you know.
Where his parents, they live next to an
IKEA. Oh, and his father was a photographer, so of course his first name is Ansel.
Okay. Like Ansel Adams, yep, yeah.
There it
gotcha.
Is.
Gotcha.
So yeah, he's, I mean, He's okay. He's great.
He's a good silent protagonist.
Silent protagonist is a very, way to present
it's
him.
It's real easy to put yourself in his shoes. If we all were, presuming we're all not scumbags, if we weren't scumbags but were really good at driving cars, like, any of us could be this. Like, the idea is, like, he is very, very, he has a lot more humanity than any of the other characters, except for maybe Deborah. He's got a lot more humanity than those other people.
He's really the only character with a character arc or any backstory at all.
That's true.
And I have a theory of why this movie works the way it does.
Okay.
That I'll get into later, but it makes sense that he's the only character with any depth.
But for somebody that we're supposed to relate to, yeah, I think it works pretty well. For somebody that we're supposed to be rooting for, I think it works really well.
I like that when Edgar Wright needed him to be more serious, because I guess he's sort of jokey all the time, he would shout at him, "Man, baby," or "Man, driver," instead of "Baby, driver." And then he had a picture of what's his name? McDowell from, what is the name? Gosh. My brain just completely drained on me. Clockwork Orange.
Oh, Malcolm McDowell?
Yeah, I had a picture of Malcolm McDowell from Clockwork Orange that he would show him when he needed to be angry. I just had it on his phone.
Just do this.
Do this. Man driver. So next on the cast list is John Bernthal.
Which is in here for a grand total of like 2 minutes.
Actually, his last line is, "If you don't see me again, it's because I'm dead."
So,
and then you don't see him again.
I'm guessing that's what happened.
And he's always great as a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
He does that well.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, John Hamm.
Yes, John Hamm,
handsome cartoon pilot.
I love John Hamm in this movie.
John Hamm is great in this movie. He is probably the secondary cast member with the most depth.
That's the one which is pushing it.
Calling it depth.
That's the one thing that I enjoy about this movie is the story, the way the story goes. You have this feeling like they set it up, if you're really following obvious beat by beat Italian Job style plot points, that he's gonna like get mad at Kevin Spacey at the end, who's like his, like, you know, the guy who's forced him into this whole life that he hates. But that's not what happens.
Well,
like, the guy who was the most buddy-buddy with him the entire time.
Whose character is literally named Buddy.
Buddy. Again.
Yeah.
Like, the one who's most nice to him, that's the guy he has to beat at the end.
Yeah.
Because of plot reasons.
Yep.
Like, that is really, really smart. Like, I did not see that being the way that this goes based on normal movie tropes, which makes me excited because I'm like, oh, something different I haven't seen before.
Yeah. Also, John Hamm was, like, the role was written for him.
Mm-hmm.
There was no question
that
he was only ever this character, and this character was only ever him.
Right.
But, man, John Hamm playing a dirtbag?
Yeah.
I need more of that.
Yeah.
I need more of John Hamm as a scenery-chewing villain.
Uh-huh.
Like, I need much more of that because he's great. Up next is his foil, Isa Gonzalez. Darling. She is on the From Dusk Till Dawn show.
Oh, okay.
That's sort of her big thing. She's also going to be in that movie that James Cameron has been working on for literally like 2 decades, based on a manga, Battle Angel Alita. She's in that with Jennifer Connelly. She was in the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Okay.
And I guess she's friends with Robert Rodriguez, and he recommended her directly to Edgar Wright.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And she works really well with John Hamm.
Yeah, she does.
Did you notice that they both have matching his and hers tattoos on their neck?
I did.
Of course they do. Of course they do.
Mm-hmm.
Up next, worth mentioning, is Lily James as Deborah.
Mm-hmm.
She is Cinderella.
Yeah.
My wife's watching the movie. She's all, "Where do I know that girl from?"
That's what she's Cinderella. Most well known from.
She's also in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and Wrath of the Titans. But everybody who's seen her has seen her in Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
The Disney remake. She's great in Cinderella. Yeah. She's
I still
good
don't
in this
watch
movie.
That movie, but I hear it's very good.
You haven't seen it?
No.
You're going to roll a tear, man.
The only live action one I've watched is Jungle Book. I need to. I'll watch Beauty and the Beast at some point, and I'm sure I will also watch Cinderella.
I have this secret theory that all of the Disney remade live action princess movies, like Maleficent and
I haven't seen that one either.
Disney was going after a secret market that nobody realized, and then the movies were wildly successful because everybody's like, oh yeah, we don't target movies for 30-year-old women.
Yeah.
And Disney was like, yeah, what if we did though?
Yeah.
Like for 30-year-old women to go see with their 10-year-old daughters.
Yeah.
And then they were like, oh, turns out they like it.
Yeah.
And so they kept making them, and they've been
You think that's what they did Jungle Book too, but just gender swap it?
Book was like, hey, this model's working. What if we made one that the dads will go see?
Try it for boys and dads. Like, try it for where the whole family can get in. Because like, it's a Disney movie. It's a fun animated Disney movie, but.
Yeah, like, I feel like Jungle Book was just proof of concept for them to make Lion King.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, we need to get Beyonce in one of these movies. Let's make Lion King. But yeah, Lily James is great as, I mean, you know what, though? Like, honestly, having recently watched all of Twin Peaks, she reminded me a lot of a Twin Peaks character.
Of Shelley?
Yeah, she reminded me a lot of Shelley.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't get her instead of Amanda Seyfried to play her daughter.
Yeah, that would have worked.
That would have worked really well.
Probably she was too expensive or too Disney.
Well, I mean, Amanda Seyfried's probably more expensive than she is.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
But Amanda Seyfried also older. Has those kind of like big round eyes, which is also what, spoiler alert, true. What Bobby Briggs, her dad, has. Yeah, so it's a nice mix.
So yeah, Lily James is good in this. I like that her character isn't just the love interest the entire time. Like, mostly, but in a way, she sort of ends up saving baby and also literally physically saving baby.
Let me ask you this. Does she fall... Because in a lot of movies like this, and a lot of newer movies, and I'm not accusing Edgar Wright of this, but I kind of am because one of the characters in his movies, in a movie based on Scott Pilgrim, Ramona Flowers, is kind of, I won't say that she's the prime example, but she shares many archetypes with the manic pixie dream girl. So does Deborah have that as well?
I feel like if anybody's a manic pixie dream anything, baby is the manic pixie dream boy.
Yeah, okay. Like, if anybody's gonna quiet, but he loves music and he's creative
and he's wild and does crazy things. Just
but he's also really sweet
and he has like some sort of sad thing deep in his past.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, he totally is that trope. 100%.
You're right.
That said,
yeah. If anything, she's more enamored with him than he is with her.
He's definitely enamored with her because I rewatched the opening.
Where she walks by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
but
I was like, hey, that's. We're going to see her later.
Yeah, but she's so much more inquisitive about what's going on with him than he is with her.
Well, and he's just a quiet dude.
Yeah.
Which again,
apparently ladies love.
I don't know.
I guess.
I talk a lot. My wife seems to like me. All right. So there's also Kevin Spacey in this movie.
Yes.
Kevin Spacey in it up.
Yep.
All right. Moving on.
Okay, let's give him a sec. Let's give him a second. Yes, we'll address the elephant in the room.
Yeah,
real
briefly.
Kevin Spacey personally has, in his personal life, has come out. But speaking on a performance level for this movie, speaking just as a performance, I think he does a good job playing.
He plays the Kevin Spacey role.
Yeah,
like they were like, oh, who are we going to get to this Kevin Spacey thing? Let's see if Kevin Spacey is available.
Will do it. Yeah,
I mean, I'm almost happy now. That he seems to be not being as much of an actor anymore, because it'll give other people opportunities to do these kinds of roles.
I think that's
because like at this one, it's the same way I felt about casting Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange, which like obviously but what if somebody else did it?
Right.
Could have been interesting in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Kevin Spacey does it exactly like I would expect Kevin Spacey to do it, and there's nothing interesting about it.
Okay,
it's fine. It's good. I mean, it's the Kevin Spacey thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he does now.
That's fair. I can see that.
So other people worth mentioning in this movie, Sky Ferreira.
I think it's Sky Ferreira. Is that how you say it?
No, there's extra vowels in
there. I know, but I think it's just pronounced
Ferreira. But she's a singer, but she also plays his mom in the flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that they actually got a singer to do that.
We've also, there's one other major character that is listed so far down on IMDb that we haven't even talked about.
Well, let's get to the unmajor characters first. It's in order of appearance, I think, is IMDb.
Okay.
But yeah, Flea's in this movie,
which is
sort of a self-referential joke on several different levels.
Yeah.
But yeah, he plays the guy with the nose problem.
Yes.
But not the nasal problem, which is a joke that comes up in the movie several times, and I'm pretty sure it's code for addicted to cocaine.
Yes. John Hamm and his wife are basically only doing this to feed a drug habit.
Yeah. And this other character we haven't mentioned.
And they
yet.
Also mentioned something. Kevin Spacey makes this a line later on when he like. Like when he kind of screws over everybody.
Yeah.
When he baby just like loses it and just, spoiler alert, like kills somebody and then like runs running through the city and everything. He says, oh, you got the whole cops behind you. He's like, oh yeah, well, buddy, like buddy too. He's like, oh great. So now you have every clean and dirty cop behind you. I'm like, oh, is Buddy a dirty cop? Is that what he is?
No, Buddy's not a dirty cop, but Kevin Spacey specifically has dirty cops in his pocket, his character.
But they never really clarify like their backstory.
No,
like,
they hint at it a lot. Nobody's backstories get clarified at all. And
the exception of like Jamie Foxx, like, I'm a criminal. That is what I am.
I mean, but they all, we know that going into it, that they're all criminals. They're participating in heists.
Right. But one is like, I'm a criminal because I like doing crime.
Yeah.
Versus like, I'm a criminal.
Jamie Foxx specifically says, I have a drug habit to support my criminal habit.
Yeah. Not a criminal habit to support my drug habit. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got Lanny June in this movie very briefly.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've seen him in a bunch of other stuff, but looking at his filmography, he was a paramedic in Alvin and the Chipmunks,
mm-hmm.
and he was in an episode of NCIS. So
I feel like he looks familiar, but I just can't place it.
It's bugging me.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to keep looking at it. Oh, I guess he was on an episode of Castle. Maybe that was it.
Oh, okay.
He was on Wizards of Waverly Place as a sensei. Oh, come on, guys. We'll figure it out. Jamie Foxx is in this movie.
Yes.
Jamie Foxx in it up.
Yes.
He plays Jamie Foxx in this movie.
He plays a little bit crazier version of Jamie
Foxx. He plays like the... I mean, his character's name is Bats. Oh, that's what I forgot to mention about the Lanny June character, is that he has a tattoo that says
Hat.
And he used to say hate, but it hurt my job...
My job, my chances of employment. Yeah, so employment.
Nobody doesn't like Hat.
Nobody doesn't like Hat.
Oh man, that's such a good stupid joke.
I mean, yeah. He's also the one for the Michael Myers masks.
Oh, so the story behind the Michael Myers masks. So they say in one of the heists, they say, get, you know, Michael Myers masks, which
Michael Myers from Halloween.
Yeah, he's the bad guy from Halloween.
Yeah. When they say that, he has get the Michael Myers Halloween masks.
Right.
That's what he says.
And then they these aren't Michael Myers Halloween masks. Go, yes, they are.
Technically
they are. But so the story behind it is that Edgar Wright wanted them to actually have actual Michael Myers masks and couldn't get the rights to it.
Oh.
And so then he wrote to actor Mike Myers and said, hey, we want to do this joke. And Mike Myers said, that's hilarious. Go for it. They wanted to get his permission to use his likeness.
Right.
And he was won over by the goodness of the joke. He's like, oh, that joke's too good. I got to say yes.
Yeah. I that was great. The Michael Myers Halloween mask. No, like the killer dude for Halloween. This is a Halloween mask.
Well, this is a Halloween mask. No, the killer dude. Oh, you mean Jason?
Yeah. No.
There's a lot of little jokes like that in this movie that are just like icing on the cake.
Yeah.
Besides that,
cast wise, that's pretty much the big group.
Big Boy from Outkast and Killer Mike make a cameo appearance as restaurant patrons talking to Kevin Spacey.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one other Academy Award winner in this movie.
Yes.
That I did a double take on. Paul Williams.
Yes.
Plays the butcher. Paul Williams is the man who wrote the song Rainbow Connection.
Yes. We've only just begun.
Yeah, he's an Academy Award winning songwriter.
He's worked on the Muppet movie, The Secret of Nim.
He's also on the last Daft Punk album.
Phantom of the Paradise. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
Oh man.
That is
a wacky thing. I think he's in it too.
Yeah. He occasionally
does. That's a wacky movie, dude.
He's kind of a wacky dude.
It's like a weird Phantom of the Opera thing, but it kind of with like glam rock and it's strange.
Yeah, he's a good composer and a great songwriter. He was on an episode of Yo Gabba Gabba.
I'm a plug my favorite show. Watch Welcome to the Basement. They do an episode on Phantom of the Paradise.
Nice.
And it is bizarre. It is a great, weird-looking movie.
But
that's great. I knew I recognized him, but I couldn't place it. That's why, because I've watched that review before, and that's why I couldn't place him.
He also pulls... Edgar Wright pulls a what was his name? A John Landis in this movie, very, mm-hmm. very slightly. John Landis always had directors as cameos in his movies.
Directors or just himself?
No. Landis always has directors as cameos in movies. Oh, okay. In Blues Brothers, Spielberg is in his movie eating a sandwich.
That's right.
In this movie, director Walter Hill is the voice of the courtroom interpreter for when Baby's foster dad is explaining in sign language how good of a duty is. Walter Hill is the director of... he produced just an insane amount of movies like all of the Alien movies. He produced Warriors. He also directed the movie Driver.
Oh, okay.
Upon which this movie is slightly based, or at least references heavily. But yeah, Walter Hill, man, has done a ton of stuff. excuse me. And so he does a voice cameo in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a good joke. He directed 48 Hours, man.
Oh, wow. There
and he did direct The Warriors. He directed Driver. So yeah, that's pretty much the cast.
All right.
So, it's honestly a pretty small cast.
It's a small cast, but it's effective.
Yeah.
It's really, really well cast, I think.
Actually, we didn't even mention the name of the guy who plays Baby's foster dad.
Oh, yeah.
His name is CJ Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And they cast him on location, actually, and he is deaf.
So
they cast him as a
I was gonna say he's very good at sign language. That would make a lot of sense.
No, that was good. And I really liked the way that they used sign language to help them keep the movie mostly silent.
Mm-hmm.
Does it when you saw it in theaters, was it subtitled? Because the version that I watched, the sign language is not subtitled.
It's subtitled.
It is subtitled?
It is subtitled.
Okay. Because it's the way that he acts as an actor and the way that Baby acts as an actor when they're signing, you can basically see what's happening even if you don't or only have a room.
Well, there's like the part where he plays the baby song for the first time and he goes like, I like her. And it's like, oh, the music is no, the girl, like the girl, whoever this girl is, I like her. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there. I mean, I'm trying to say if you missed anything with the subtitles.
No, I pretty much got the whole last scene where he's dropping him off with all the cash at the old folks' home.
Yeah.
Take care of yourself.
He likes the peanut butter spread to the edges of the crest.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that was the most
heartwrenching.
He's very much is the voice of like, I want you to stop doing this. Like, you should get out. Like, that's why he gets a pizza job. He's like, wouldn't it be nice to use your driving skills and actually
give do something
back
good
to other people and like do something nice?
Wow, that was fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the themes of this movie.
Okay, well,
and the MacGuffin.
And the MacGuffin. We use MacGuffin really loosely on the show. We generally use it to me. It's a filmmaking term. Alfred Hitchcock used it a lot. It's the thing everybody's trying to get. It's the Ark of the Covenant and Raiders of the Lost Ark. In this movie, I feel like there's kind of a classic one.
Okay.
And it's freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that too, but I would also argue that Baby is the MacGuffin.
Sure, I could see that.
Because Kevin Spacey is trying to get him to just continue to be his driver because he's his lucky charm.
Mm-hmm.
Deborah obviously wants to kind of
be with
move,
him. Yeah.
And so does he. And even towards the end, everybody else is coming after Baby
obviously
as well. But even Baby's trying to find Baby. There is definitely like a, who am I now that I'm this? Like, I don't. Because there's moments where he's like, yeah, I'm done. And then he pulls him right back in and he's like, well, I can hurt you, whatever.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, and you can, I mean, and it's not
really
spelled out.
There's moments where he flirts with, like, not flirts with, but he's like, he tries to leave and tries to get out. There's moment after moment after moment. And just everything just keeps kicking him down. Every time he tries, something goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's, and to be fair, he's a kid. He's sloppy.
Yeah.
Like anybody in their right mind would know that in a criminal organization, you don't have a tape recorder anywhere near your person, even if you're just trying to do little mixes and stuff, which was really great.
Yeah.
I love when I saw that the first time, I'm like, that's really great. Like the Is He Slow?
Yeah, that was good. I like that they got world renowned DJ Kid Koala to actually.
Oh, did they really do?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a track on it. On the soundtrack, they had Kid Koala actually DJ that bit.
But like a lot of it to me, it feels like obviously he's the driving force in the movie, but he also, no pun intended, I said driving force.
Yeah, no, that's good.
I didn't mean it as a joke. It just came out that
it
way.
It is though.
But I feel like he's really what everybody's trying to get.
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
I would say if we're really gonna talk classic MacGuffin, like a thing that the Baby as a character is the MacGuffin.
It's
of the
closest
movie
that you the get to a thing classic thing.
But like, I agree.
Other than like in the last, you know, the heists.
I agree. Freedom too.
I
think I think at least especially for his character, that's super important. Like he definitely wants to get out of this and kind of find, make, he's been indebted to I don't remember.
Doc.
That's right. He's been indebted to Doc for so long. Like that's all he knows.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's trying to find. It is kind of an identity story, oddly enough, which you wouldn't think, but
yeah, it's really like a character focus on him. Yeah, that's what you. I remember what you told me when I was going to watch it. Is like, yeah, it's more of a character study than it is like a classic heist movie.
Yeah,
I mean, it's.
I mean, there's great chases in this movie. Don't get me wrong; like the action sequences are awesome.
Yeah,
but
well, let's talk a little bit about, because this is the last movie we put in Heist Month. And,
yeah,
and upon reflection, we probably should have watched like Logan Lucky instead.
I would say, here's the thing though, this is not a heist movie in the sense of it is a heist that they plan the whole movie and then pull off,
right?
But there are multiple robbery based heist stuff. It's not heist in the sense of Ocean's 11 style heist.
No,
it's not a thing where it's like, and then we're gonna do all these wacky things. It's a heist movie in the sense that there's bank robberies that are coordinated, there are plans that are made up, like, so they do that. We're planning the thing out multiple times, maybe in smaller doses, because they're only robbing, you know, a bank or an armored car or the post office at the end, which apparently I have heard after this movie, I've heard from multiple things that robbing a post office is the dumbest thing you can do.
Nice.
Like, it's really dumb. Like, you're not like, it's really dumb, because it's not like it's not the same way as a bank is. Like, and I haven't been to post offices where I wouldn't think I'd need to see that, but there are several signs that like armed robbery, this is what you will have happen to you if you try to rob.
It's a federal offense immediately.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also like, post offices are built the way they're built to make it difficult to
rob.
Yeah.
Right. Not like a bank, which is like.
The benefit of a post office compared to a bank is like a bank, they want you to invite you in. They want you to feel like, hey, this bank is cool. And the post office is like, no.
Get in, get out.
Like the fact that we let you in at all is something you should be happy about.
Yeah. Every time I go to the post office, it's always cold. I just want to get out of there.
It's always cramped.
Yeah.
And it's hard to.
And people don't understand how lines work.
Yeah.
Like, no, people get up to the front and be like, I have so many questions about what to do. I don't know.
And you've been standing in this line for half an hour. You're just
like,
figure it out.
And you're just like, well, you're almost just like, okay, can you give the person their options, set them aside, and continue to move through the line?
Yeah. I just need to ship this one package.
Yeah. I just need to ship this one package. I'm going to tell you it takes 2 to 3 days to get there. It's fine. I'll pay you the money and get out. I don't need to be like, what if I have this special? I don't have special. There should have a special circumstance line and
I feel like,
Ryan, I went to one and I saw an old lady holding a card, an envelope, and a manila envelope and said, how do I do this?
Ian,
I'm going to get on my high horse.
Oh boy.
You're old. You should know better than us young people how the post office works.
We don't use it
as often as you do.
They have the automated thing now.
Not all of them do.
Yeah, that's true.
I love the auto. Oh, if I have a small package, you better believe I'm doing that automated thing.
Yeah.
It's great.
One of these days, I'm just going to buy one of those USB scales and never have to go to a post office again.
Yeah, just go to stamps.com.
Yep.
This episode's sponsored by
nobody sponsors
I wish.
Us. Edgar Wright sponsors us in our hearts because we love him so.
Robbing a post office, bad idea. Yeah. Don't do it.
So heists in this movie are treated like from a filmmaker writer sense as like a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
Like heists in this movie are treated as if it's like, hey, you've seen a heist movie before.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, it's almost
let's keep moving.
It's almost like, too, like every single heist, like, oh, yeah, things are meant to be stolen. Like, it's almost like a foregone conclusion in the sense that, like, yeah, things are going to get stolen all the time.
Well, and I mean, things do get stolen all the time. That's
like, it didn't seem like, never seemed like these heists are a big deal. No. Even the post office one, it's like, it's just another day at work.
No, I feel like this is basically like their job.
Yeah, and they don't, that's the other thing that I really like, too, is that they don't really show you what's going on.
No.
Like, you're always from baby's perspective of, like... A scene where it's not from baby's perspective?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. And that works from a filmmaker standpoint, but also it feeds into this element of the movie, which is a whole lot about this movie plays on... And this isn't the only Edgar Wright movie to do this, and I think that's why it's sort of a uniquely Edgar Wright movie, is that a lot of the things that happen, a lot of the characters that exist, a lot of the everything about the movie, almost everything about the movie, isn't explained because you've seen movies before.
Yeah.
You know, like they're sitting down, they're doing the briefing.
They think the audience is smart.
Where did these guys come from? You've seen these kind of movies before.
Doesn't matter.
You've seen a movie where Jamie Foxx is sort of a psycho gangster guy. Yep. Okay.
It's something
like
that,
almost all of the characters and all of the situations that happen are shorthand. I mean, we talked about Kevin Spacey, that he plays Kevin Spacey in this movie because you don't need, like, everything in this movie exists because other movies exist.
Right, right.
Like none of the reason that none of the characters in the gangs have much backstory is because they don't need to. You've seen enough other movies. You've seen enough Fast and the Furious movies. You've seen Ocean's 11 and those kind of movies where you can be like, oh, okay, yeah, all right.
It's a thing you always say, which is that why give unnecessary backstory that we don't need that isn't going to move the plot forward?
Yeah.
Just to give the backstory just so somebody out there is like, I know what happened. Sometimes it's important to where you're like, I need to know this information. But sometimes there are movies where they give it and you're like, I didn't need to know that information. So I think Edgar Wright does a really good job of giving us what we need to know and not giving us stuff we don't need to know.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the here's my big theory of the movie.
Sure.
The thing about this movie that exists is that this movie is about remixing. And I know that sounds sort of dumb, an article about millennials written about 6 years ago.
Please tell me.
But
tell me why.
Everything in this movie is a remix. Nothing in this movie exists on its own. Everything exists based on prior art. All of the music, so much of the music is music that you've heard before. Edgar Wright in the soundtrack uses 3 or 4 songs that have been sampled and you've heard the sampled version. He uses the Harlem Shake by Sam and Dave very early in the movie, an incredible one-shot scene where the lyrics of the song are spray-painted around while he's dancing around.
That's when I knew this movie. I remember watching the opening chase sequence and being like, that's really fantastic. But that's when I knew this movie. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to really pay attention.
Yeah.
Like in order to
fully, I watched that scene.
I'm like,
twice,
oh, that's
actually.
Right. It's Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
I was like, tell me more.
But the way the song Harlem Shake starts, everybody's heard it because it's the way Jump Around starts by House of Pain. And so you hear it and you're thinking House of Pain's going to start. No, it doesn't. And he does that a bunch of times. A bunch of the songs on the soundtrack are songs that you've heard sampled before. And then he flips it. You hear the Shaft theme and it ends up being Young MC right at the end. But it's sort of like a hint, like, hey, we're context is included. Everything has context. You're hearing the song and you start thinking of another song because like that exists in the world and it's incorporated into your thoughts of how this song plays into the scene. And with that, if you think about it, all of the characters, with the exception of Baby, reference characters not directly, but like are shorthand enough that you can get characters from somebody else. Like I think the fact that Lily James reminds me of Shelley from Twin Peaks.
She's also a waitress as well.
Is on purpose.
Yeah, and she also kind of has I don't mean this in a degrading way, but she also kind of has that little bit of helpless to her.
Yeah,
like
that like tragic character who
like she's
who
like I'm
wants to
I'm,
escape but can't.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's why I asked the manic pixie dream girl question.
But I mean, like Kevin Spacey's character, John Hamm's character, on down. Everybody is a character that you've seen in something else.
Right.
Like not specifically, but generally you've seen that. We've seen heist movies before. We've seen car chase movies before.
Would you even argue that Edgar Wright remixed himself in this movie?
Yeah, absolutely.
By doing another Queen song?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to have a Queen song the end of the movie.
By the way, that is one of my favorite Queen songs. And so when they started talking about Brighton Rock and Sheer Heart Attack, I'm like, the only other people in my life who have ever talked to this level of Queen knowledge has been me and my dad.
Aww.
Edgar Wright and I would get along very well.
But I mean, like a character with mommy issues and a character with dad issues. He has both, clearly.
Yep.
And there's like multiple surrogate fathers in the movie. Mm-hmm. Like all of this stuff isn't explained very heavily because you're used to it. This is just a remix version of stuff that you're familiar with.
Yeah.
And so he can get away with a ton of shorthand because I've seen a Fast and the Furious movie.
Yeah.
Because I've seen an Ocean's 11 movie. And it's like that. Like if you keep breaking the movie down, keep looking at different elements of the movie, everything that happens in the movie, even the running car chase scene or the running scene when he runs through the mall and he's running through the thing, like, it reminds me of Ferris Bueller.
Yep.
It reminds me of Blues Brothers. It reminds me of Captain America 2 when they're running through the mall. All of those, that's on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that like Baby has, you know, all the different sunglasses and iPods and stuff. Actually, it's a good character bit. The idea was if he's been stealing cars since he was 12, he's probably just amassed a ton of sunglasses and iPods because that's what's in people's cars.
Well, I like the idea too that he has, because of his like inner ear issue, he has multiple iPods, so he's never without music.
Yeah. Well, and he has multiple iPods.
Also, did you notice, I don't know how good your sound is at home, but I didn't notice this when I was out in the movie theater, but I noticed the heck out of it at home.
Huh.
anytime there was a scene with him and there was not music playing,
there's ringing.
There's a slight ringing. And yeah, I kept pausing it, being like, okay, is that my actual ears? Is that the movie or is it something in the environment? I thought that was genius.
Yeah, I actually have a slight tinnitus, so I did notice it immediately. I was like, oh, great. Thanks a lot, guys. But yeah, everything in this movie exists, like builds upon prior art.
The fact that there's a T-Rex song in here that isn't Bang a Gong.
Yeah,
again,
it's pretty good.
I bow down to you, Edgar Wright. And that joke is great. By Trex? I'm like,
I guess Sony executives were like, hey, that makes him look stupid. And he's like, no, we gotta leave that in. It's a good joke.
It's a good joke, but also it's like, okay.
But no,
here's
but
why
think about
it's
it.
Good though. Even from like a I'm gonna go a little on my high horse here. Here's why it's good, because it makes him not know everything. And she's like,
vulnerable.
Oh, you mean T-Rex? Like, but I know something more than
but
you.
But it also works for his character, because
yeah.
If this is just somebody's stolen iPod,
yeah, he doesn't know.
He was just like, all right, well, I don't know
what
this
is, but I like
it.
Or it's a song he's heard a lot. Yeah, he doesn't know how to say it, right?
Yeah. You know, if he's never talked to anybody else about it.
No, he's so quiet. Yeah. He just said, this is the most I've talked to anybody in a year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's not going to know.
But, I mean, they
that's
really...
That's what I kind of like about the music in this movie, and we'll go more in depth on it, but I like that about his character is he doesn't seem to judge any music.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, there's a lot of people who will be like, oh, it's this type of genre. He just seems to, like, enjoy music as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's... He like... Almost like he's like, oh, this is the perfect song for this specific thing, but there's no judgment on, oh, but it's overplayed, or oh, but it's this, or oh, but it's that.
Yeah.
It just kind of, and the music fits in the movie that way too. It's not something where it's, and I liked your remix point. I never actually really thought about that, but I noticed that when I listened to the soundtrack. Like,
well,
yeah.
And I feel like
this has been sampled a lot.
But I feel like the movie itself, I think Edgar Wright sort of winks at the camera when Baby is remixing the conversation that he had,
mm-hmm.
that it's sort of like, hey, I'm doing this to you right now.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, he's got a vinyl copy of the incredible Bondo Band, Apache,
mm-hmm.
the most sampled song ever.
Mm-hmm.
Right there in the shot when mm-hmm. he's remixing, sort of saying like, you know, everything is built on other
that's
stuff.
That's the drum beat, right? That they use.
Yeah.
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 Everybody uses.
Yeah, the Apache beat.
Yep.
But so much, like so much of this movie just exists in reference to other things.
It's true.
And it's done on purpose. And to the point that even the music exists in reference to other things. Everything, it's weird because like, I can't look at this movie without the context of movies and music that I've listened to in, you know, my 30 something years of life. And nobody can.
Yeah.
But it'd be weird. Like if you were able to show like an alien who had no concept of humanity besides this movie,
uh-huh.
tons of stuff would be like, well, I don't,
what?
Why are they doing it that way? Why is this happening? It's like, well, no, I mean, you know, you haven't seen like a heist movie, you know, it's, you know, that's the group, you know, they're robbing the thing. Come
it's almost
on,
like,
you know,
I'll be
you?
Honest. I kind of want to watch somebody who, I want to have somebody who doesn't have a lot of movie experience watch this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I know people who, like we talked about last time, people who are like, oh, I've seen that movie. I don't need to see it again. Like people who like don't, for lack of a better word, fetishize movies like you and mm-hmm. I do. Somebody's just like, oh yeah, movies are entertainment.
Yeah.
But they don't like not enough to sit down and be like, oh, this is this trope and this trope. I kind of like to see what their reaction to this movie would be.
Yeah. But I feel like that
would
can
they
explain...
like it or would they hate it?
I feel like that can explain a lot of the lack of depth in this movie is that all the depth is implied based on other movies, even TV shows that you've seen mm-hmm. that reference this. I mean, at the same time, it would be nice for Edgar Wright to make a movie where there's a female character who exists beyond being a love interest. I mean,
I won't argue any of the Scott Pilgrim characters. I kind of do, but I wouldn't say that's his.
The best you get is Kim Pine, and that's not. Nothing Edgar Wright did is that.
Yeah.
That was 100% the book.
Yeah.
But yeah, Edgar Wright needs to make a movie with a woman in it.
That'd be actually interesting.
I
think that's something. I mean, and it's not that he can't do it because if you watch Spaced, he's good with different characters of different
varieties. Sure. I mean, and to be fair, Spaced was not Edgar. Like, he directed it, but he didn't direct everything, and he was definitely not the writer.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, he knows people.
Yeah.
He, you know, that's the thing. Like if you don't know what to do, get somebody else. There's turns out like half the world is women.
What?
You know,
when did this happen?
There's a good chance there's one around.
Gross. I don't know. I didn't know what to say.
Yeah. I'm such a child.
Icky. So they're going to win at Girls Chase Boys or Boys Chase Girls.
Is that a,
or Girls Tag Boys or Girls. Yeah. You never played that when you were like in kindergarten?
No.
It was like the like.
And we played in college, but I feel like it was maybe a different.
It's a very different game.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about action sequences, though.
Sure.
This movie has some incredible driving sequences and stuff. Honestly, maybe I'm wrong, but stuff I've never seen in other movies.
Yeah, no, they definitely.
Hide and seek parking lot chase scene.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Never seen. What other movie have you ever seen that in?
No, yeah, that's good. Just the amount of times that red car in the cold open goes sideways.
Oh, man.
It is going sideways more than it's going forward.
And the way he uses, that's the one thing I really like, too, is that they use the car as an extension of his body, if that makes any sense. Like when he, it's right in the first scene where they put down the strip. And he just bumps it with a tire and bumps it into another car. It's almost like he just reached out with his leg and kicks it.
Speed racers it.
Yeah.
This is other than Speed Racer, this is the only movie where the cars do things like ninjas.
Yeah. Or also, what was the other one? Oh, when they were doing the armored car and he hits that cart into the guy and knocks him down. Like moments like that are so cool.
It's so cool.
And I really like kind of there's a couple of climaxes in the movie, climaxes type stuff. But I like when he finally loses control.
Mm-hmm.
He just can't put up with it anymore. He just decides, I'm going to suck at driving right now. I'm just going to purposely crash this car to kill this guy.
Yeah.
Like he literally, I feel like the entire movie, he doesn't really ever try to use the car as a weapon.
No. I mean, and the entire movie, you see, he sort of shies away from is concerned about violence.
He doesn't really like hurting people.
Yeah.
Like, especially at least innocent people.
He doesn't like people to get hurt.
Yeah. I like that moment with the armored car where he knows they're going to have to kill the guy. So he just pulls out of frame and you can't see the action that's going on. It's all blocked.
Yeah.
And then he pulls back when they're done. Mm. Like he just, I feel like he did that just like, I don't want to have to look and see what's going on.
Yeah. And I mean, like there's sort of like it, hey, you know, you're doing this, whether or not you want to, you're willing to be complicit in it. You are complicit in it.
Right.
But I mean like at the same time, when they grab that lady's Saturn, he takes the baby out and hands it to her.
Yeah.
Which
or he throws like that lady back her purse. Which
yeah, part of me who has dad anxiety was like, oh god, oh god, oh god. Okay, good. They gave her the baby back. Okay, it's like a nightmare, man.
I don't doubt it.
I love that scene where he gives the lady the car back because he burns it out. Like he burns the car out, flips it around, just blowing smoke from the tires.
Gives her purse. Like,
tries to find a song on the radio.
Yeah,
finally finds one, and then sees the person, sees her, and hands her a purse and says, "I'm sorry," and then just guns it.
Oh yeah. I mean, and the movie opens with an incredible, like the movie hooks you right away.
It's an insane cold open.
Like you're just like, oh wow, this is insane. And then you're just like, what else could happen? And like, it just gets crazier and crazier until by the end, it's a foot chase where he crashes two or three cars.
Yeah.
Into
and
each
I feel,
other.
I feel like
it's
that
like he finally lost control. And like, now he sucks at driving. He's like, I can't, he's hitting things like the guy who will hit things, but keep the car going somehow. Finally is just he's emotionally compromised.
Finally lets his emotions get to him in that scene where he kills Jamie Foxx.
Mm-hmm.
And then he can't drive.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like a, you know, I lost the magic ability to fly or something.
Yeah. And even still, even at the end,
I
like
wonder how many more Peter Pan references there are in this movie.
Even at the end, like, yeah, he outsmarts John Hamm, but like he does it by like just ramming cars into cars.
Yeah. He just hitting stuff.
Yeah.
It was funny that they end up in that Bronco that they used to push John Hamm's cop car off the thing.
Uh-huh.
Like they didn't go steal another car that wasn't like demolished and covered in bullet holes. They're like, well, we're just going to take this one.
Yeah.
Also John Hamm making him deaf.
Yeah. Oh man, that was the best moment. I was like, I have expected the total cliche of I'm going to shoot your girlfriend in front of you. And that's what's going to do it. Nope. He's just like,
I'm going to take away the thing that you love and then you won't be able to hear her scream is what he says.
Well, no, it's when he goes, you took something I love from me, so I have to take something I love from you. And you expect he's just going to go kill
her.
Nope,
yeah.
Death first.
Yeah.
Like, you need that music. He knows that about the character. It's like, you know, you love this so much, but I'm going to take it from you. I also enjoyed, I don't know if you noticed this, the end of the movie.
Uh-huh.
Did you notice when he was leaving prison what was in the background?
No. The rainbow? Yeah. Well, that's
Dolly Parton.
That's
reference
that. Well, and so the Dolly Parton reference that they said is that you have to have some rain before there's going to be a rainbow.
Yeah.
And in that scene, that lady's walking towards him. He's sitting in the car and he waves her off.
Uh-huh.
The lady who quoted that Dolly Parton line to him.
Mm-hmm.
It is raining.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
That's also smart too. But yeah, once he gets out of prison, there's a rainbow in the background. Oh, you're like,
and that reminds me of the other thing.
I didn't think about that either. That's really smart.
None of the lines, I think with the exception of maybe one or two, like it's not pure, but almost nothing that Baby says in the movie is something that we haven't already, everything that he says is something we've already heard in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Every single line, like there's that TV montage, which Edgar Wright does those so well, and he's done those since Shaun of the Dead.
Stop quoting Monsters Incorporated.
Sam's
favorite.
That's such a good line. But everything that gets said in that, he says later in the movie. He only ever says things that other people have said or that he's heard say. And we can go back and do a real close watch. But I feel like none of his lines, which there are very few, are anything original at any point.
Again,
with the exception of when he's reading when he's saying into the tape recorder, the information about his foster father.
Yeah.
But everything else goes back to the whole movie is a remix.
It's almost like
he is a remix. He doesn't, everything that he comes up with is taken from something else and reused.
Well, and by that point, maybe the message by that point is that he is kind of separate, like things are different now. Like that's the moment where things change.
Yeah, that could, and that could, that definitely could be it. That's where he finally becomes his own person.
Yeah, and I mean, he goes, even in the when he's in the diner and John Hamm's there, he's like, you love this girl? He's like, yeah, I do. Like without hesitation.
Yeah.
He's like he's finally opening up and speaking up for himself and saying things that we haven't seen him say at all.
Yeah, I really like Lily James's, Cinderella's reaction to that. She's kind of like, what?
Really?
Like, oh.
That's awesome. That's good. Thanks.
Yeah, I like I like that she's an actress. Is like she's right on it. She's paying attention.
She's good. But the action scene, like this movie hits every point. It's funny. It's
heart-wrenching.
It's a visual film. There's so many films that don't use the visual medium of film, and Edgar Wright, especially for comedy. Like
and action.
Yeah, I mean, for any Edgar Wright movie uses the visual medium of film. He understands what movies are or what like the best way to do a movie is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he understands the form of art he's choosing and uses that to its fullest ability.
Yeah, there was a Every Frame of Painting. Rest in peace, Every Frame of Painting. There's an Every Frame of Painting video a while ago about motivated camera movement that I remember watching. Mm-hmm. Edgar Wright in this movie, none of the camera movement is unmotivated. It only like. Every time, because the idea of motivated camera movement is that anytime the camera moves, it should be to direct you, the watcher, towards something or away from something, or it should be for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And every time the camera moves in this movie, it is for a reason. It is to get you to do something, as opposed to camera just moving because it's crazy.
Right.
And so I think this movie follows that in. Man, that one shot opening scene or title scene, is so fun.
Yeah.
I guess they did 26 takes, and the one they used in the film was the 21st take.
Oh, there you go. All right, Ryan. So
all the lyrics of the song are painted on the background.
Oh, should we talk more about the music? Good. Should we talk any?
Yeah,
we should. We kind of briefly touched on a little bit.
So the music is a lot of stuff that has been used, sampled in rap and hip hop and stuff like that. So it ends up being a lot of like 60s and 70s Motown and R&B and funk and soul. But with also, some 80s punk, there's some Modern Lovers in there, there's some Damned in there, and then, more obscure cuts, but it's definitely, it puts Edgar Wright in the movie soundtrack choice list, shortlist, with Scorsese, with Tarantino, with Wes Anderson. I feel like this is, and this isn't the first one. This isn't the first time that he's done that. He uses pop music a lot in his movies.
Mm-hmm.
But this one's, I think, his best use of music. I'm a huge fan of music videos. I used to watch music videos a whole lot. And this whole movie is, in a sense, a music video. And I love it. Even the guns are shot on beat in this movie.
Yes.
Apparently, and I was reading about it, the actors had the music synced up.
Oh, yeah.
So that they could do things on beat, all of them together.
Great, that's how you do it.
Yeah. Oh, it's so cool.
There's another comment I was going to make about the music, but now I can't remember what it is. Oh well.
There's playlists online that have the whole all of the music.
It. Yeah,
I would recommend against driving listening to music, though I have been doing that today. I also found out it's not even that fast. But yeah, so maybe not all the songs are good for driving, because it's like listening to Sonic the Hedgehog soundtrack while you drive, which also don't do. Furthermore, don't listen to any of the Mario Kart soundtracks while you drive, or else you'll put yourself and your family in danger. Danger to you and all of the people around you.
There's another music point I wanted to make, but I can't remember what it was. You're making me forget it even more. I can't remember what it is.
There's a Run the Jewels track on the soundtrack, mm-hmm. because the movie is set in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Originally, the movie was going to be set in L.A., but then there was financial incentive for them to do it in Atlanta, and they were going to have Atlanta stand in for L.A., but then Edgar Wright, I think, smartly said, no, let's just put it in Atlanta. And he sent out location scouts and got people to help him change the script and make stuff so it's actually referential to Atlanta.
I enjoy also, I know it's kind of obvious and on the nose, but I enjoy the uses with the word baby in
oh,
here.
Yeah.
And how you can read that, like when they do Nowhere to Run. Oh my God, it's so good. I was like, yep, uh-oh. I was like, uh-oh, what's going to happen here?
Oh, I guess James Gunn also is a guy who does good movie soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
Put him on that top five.
Tarantino as well.
Yeah, no, I said Tarantino.
Oh, you did? Okay, good.
Tarantino, Scorsese, James Gunn, Wes Anderson,
yep. mm-hmm.
and Edgar Wright.
Yep, I would say those are some solid choices.
I also like those guys' movies.
Mm-hmm.
I
do too, for the most part. So okay, out of ten, Ryan, what do you rate this movie?
Oh man, it's.
Or do you have any other final thoughts other than you really enjoyed it?
I love this dang movie and I wanted to watch it immediately. like literally, I finished this movie and I was like, okay. You know, let's put on some Forensic Files before we go to bed, because that's our new addiction. And I was like,
can watch it again?
I gotta watch the title sequence again. And I literally pushed play on it again, forwarded through the car chase scene just so I could watch him, and so just so I could watch that Harlem Shake scene again where you mm-hmm. see all the layers in the background. I had to watch it again. I want to watch this movie again right now. It is my favorite movie that I've seen this year.
Hmm. All right. Well, I would say yep. I've seen a lot of movies this year, and I would probably say at least, I mean, there's a couple more weeks left in the Star Wars movie coming out, but like excluding franchise movies that I've seen,
mm-hmm.
This is probably also my favorite movie I've seen this year.
Including franchise movies is still my favorite.
And I would probably even say including franchise movies so far. If you had to make me pick best superhero movie of the year, Spider-Man Homecoming would probably be it.
Still haven't seen Thor.
Spider-Man Homecoming I enjoyed more. I enjoyed Thor. It's fun. But
you told me I would like it.
I think you would.
Which is funny because you also told me I'd really like this movie and you were right.
I was right. I know the kind of movies you like versus what you won't like. At least I think so. You always find ways to surprise me though. So out of 10 though, what do you rate it? You can go ahead. It's all right. You can say it.
I don't know if I want to give it a 10 out of 10. Like it could have been... You know, there could have been better. It could have been better, but it's
nitpicks.
Yeah, I mean, can I give it a 9.9? I feel
sure.
That won't fit. No, that's not going to fit on the spreadsheet. It's going to throw all the numbers off.
Full or half numbers only.
What about a quarter? Can I get a quarter number?
Nope, full
nine,
or half.
9.75?
9.5 out of 10. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I know what movies I've given 10 out of 10 now, thanks to that spreadsheet. So yeah, I'm going to give it a 9.5 out of 10. 9.5 red Subarus. And apparently they gave Baby one of them for his birthday.
Oh, really?
Because he was so obsessed with the car.
Oh, well, there you go.
They also built one of them so that the driver sat on the roof so that they could shoot the scene inside the car without uh-huh. having to worry about anybody actually paying attention to driving.
Oh, there we go. Well,
9.5. What do you give it?
I'll give it the same actually. I really enjoyed this movie. Yeah, this is probably my favorite movie so far of 2017. And I don't know if I mean, there's only two other movies I'm going to go see this year, which is The Disaster Artist. I'm going to go see this week, which is the movie about The Room and Tommy Wiseau, with James Franco and Seth Rogen and Dave Franco, and then I'm also going to see Star Wars. But after that, I don't know if there's really any other movies I'm really going to go like see on.
I want to
like,
see Jumanji.
Yeah. Did you see that they re-released the board game at Target?
Nice.
They brought the ones from my youth, the one that I thought was the coolest thing ever because I thought it was the actual wooden thing.
Yeah, don't play it.
No, I won't.
Obviously, it will destroy your small New England town.
I guess so. Yeah, probably so far at least is my number one movie of 2017. It's the one I really enjoyed the most. The one I didn't expect much from, but expected to be good, but didn't expect it to be like this much my favorite. So.
Yeah.
So Blockbuster, Lackluster,
Blockbuster.
If you have not watched an Edgar Wright movie, you know what? I'll say this. I think this is a pretty accessible Edgar Wright movie too.
I agree.
Like I love Shaun of the Dead. I love the Cornetto movies. I love Scott Pilgrim. But I would argue this is like the most mainstream one. And that's not an insult. I mean, it's the one that has the most mainstream appeal. I know people who've never talked about like Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz or like Scott Pilgrim with the level of revelry we do, who are like, oh man, Baby Driver was so good. I'm just like, you like Edgar Wright? They're like, oh well, yeah, but like, no, it's just so good. So
yeah, this is, oh, it's so good.
So yeah, so all right, guys. Well, that is our rating for Baby Driver. We also have a little Back at the Ranch. I don't really have a lot like action movie related, but
Star Wars movie's coming out. I want to see Jumanji. It sounds ridiculous.
Looks really fun. I saw a movie the other day. It's not an action movie, but I did watch Disney Pixar's Coco.
Oh, did you?
It was really good.
That's what I heard. I've heard it's good. I've heard that the Frozen part is great too.
No.
If you like Olaf.
If you love Frozen and Olaf, get ready.
Boy,
for 22 minutes of Frozen fun.
Can't wait till that's out.
But it is I have a Pixar theory, much like you have, not Pixar theory where they're all connected, but much like you have a Marvel movie theory.
Yeah.
My Pixar theory is that Pixar is at their best when they are doing something original, when they're doing something new, where they are totally free and not bound to anything that's pre-existing.
Yeah.
That's not to say that some of the sequels aren't good. I mean, the Toy Story sequels are all great.
Incredible sequels happening.
Looks
There's
good,
a teaser.
Looks good. I know, I mean, I've seen Finding Dory was fine. I didn't think Monsters University was terrible, but Pixar is at their best when they're doing their own original ideas. And I think that this is really, really good for that because it hits that emotional like point. Kind of like Inside Out did. It has that same sort of like feel of like, oh, this is something new and interesting. It's a new idea there. And to be honest, like I'm not Hispanic, but my best friend is Hispanic. And I think it does a pretty decent job from what I understand of like explaining the Hispanic culture of like the Day of the Dead and like how family, the way family is really important and like how that plays a huge role. I think even, I know that sounds weird, but even more so than like in, I don't know why I say white culture, but like typical American culture, it's like, oh, well, grandma's getting old. Let's put her in the home.
Yeah.
It's like,
no,
there's not this thing of like, we
handle,
have to take care of our family and family is super important.
Yeah.
And like, even the lineage of our family is important. There's a lot of that in there too. And the most impressive thing to me was the way they got the guitar playing right. Cause I guess they strapped GoPros to guys who are, or people who are actually
guitarists.
playing the actual songs from the movie. So then the animators could go, okay, that. Which is great because as a musician and a guitar player, that's one of the most frustrating things is when you see someone just like, nope, that's not at all what it looks like. So I would recommend it. If you got kids or if you don't, I mean, I went and saw my parents and my dad weep like a small girl. It was cute.
Aww.
But my dad also, my grandpa passed away last year, so he lost his dad. So there's a lot of like remembrance stuff. Like there's a lot of theme of like remembering people and how that's important too. That's part of the family thing. So that played into it a lot. It was really good though. It's making me teared up just thinking about that. There's a really sweet scene towards like the last 20 minutes of the movie. You will be in tears. I promise you. But it's good. You should check it out.
Speaking of movies, the ends leave you in tears. I watched Home Alone 2.
Lost in New York.
And I had to, I like stopped it and explained to my children, like, these men would be dead.
You see what the
this would have killed
now
him.
Kids
this would
don't
have
ever
him
play
again.
Don't ever play it with electricity because you'll turn
dad
into
why
a
is
skeleton.
He doing that when he touches the thing because he's dying.
Did you really say
he's
that?
He's been electrocuted to death. This would have killed. I was just like,
have you ever watched those videos where they do the death counts?
Oh man, it's insane.
They do it for other movies too, but they do it for Home Alone.
Yeah,
oh my god, it's like
guys would have died
dead
so many times.
dead. The part though in Home Alone 2 that's the best is the part where he electrocutes himself and turns into a skeleton.
Turns into a skeleton with a beard and a
yeah, you know,
a
like
crazy
like
hair.
Like real life.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I pointed it out. And Bella's like, yeah, that's my favorite part too. My daughter was like, yeah, I love the part where he turns into a skeleton.
It sounds like a toolbox falling down the stairs.
That's what that sound is.
I think
that's
Home Alone
the best,
2
that's
is
the best
criminally,
part of that scene.
I think Home Alone 2 is criminally underrated.
I
love Home
Alone. Home
Alone
2 is not great.
No.
It is not as good as Home Alone.
We're going to have a fight.
Okay, that's fine.
Do we have to debate? Want to debate this right now?
No,
we want to debate why?
No.
I think Home Alone, the original Home Alone is good, but I think the added factor of it being in a different location, in a big city, it's sequel escalation.
Yeah, no, it's classic sequel escalation.
Yeah, and they do the house thing again. I would say that the tricks in the second movie are way better. in that house than in the first movie.
I mean, they're way more over the top.
Yeah, that's why I like them. Okay. Yeah. That's what I mean by better.
My favorite part is the tools falling down the stairs. That also
or lighting Harry's head on fire.
Yeah, the product placement in Home Alone 2 is off the charts.
Oh yeah,
and not even just the Talk Boy, just American Airlines. Oh, man, and
I love that talk.
The Plaza Hotel, credit cards, and I mean even.
Oh, are you talking about the part where our president directs the little boy to the front desk? Did you stop the movie and say, "Hey kids, that's the president"?
No, they know because they have to talk about it at school.
Oh boy.
yeah.
That
must
be a fun conversation.
So what are we doing
also,
for the last... Yeah?
Here is why Home Alone is better. Home Alone 2 is better.
Why?
Tim Curry.
Okay, yeah. Tim Curry is great.
We love you.
Yeah.
Gonna have to do Tim better than that. Good. Little Mo with the gimpy leg.
Little Mo?
Cliff, it's not true. Come on.
That's a pretty good scene.
Here's the thing.
That's
I will say that heartfelt wise, the first one definitely has more heart to it.
Yes.
But
yeah.
The second one is funnier.
The second one's so ridiculous, great. But the first one is sweeter.
Also, that giant toy store. Come on. What's not to love about that?
FAO Schwartz, man.
I mean, pretty much. Yeah. All right. So we have a couple more movies we're going to watch for the end of the year for December. And we decided to let some friends and family pick our for the holidays, as we do, pick the last two movies we're watching for the year. So we gave two of our friends, we gave them a list.
So one of our listeners,
special shout out
on Twitter is 10K Beers. He made a spreadsheet for us that lists every episode, every movie we've talked about, what Ian's rating was, what my rating was, whether it's a blockbuster or lackluster, et cetera.
He's our most dedicated Super Action Bros listener.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
And so on that spreadsheet, along with a categorization of what actors have appeared multiple times on the show, mm-hmm. which boggles my mind that just the fact that data exists. The third tab on there is a list of good movies and bad movies he would like us to talk about.
He also recently pointed out from our Four Color one that he does that we have mentioned other characters other than Venom multiple times,
which
I'm surprised at because I'm pretty sure we haven't, but he's a dedicated listener. He knows.
I believe it.
Yeah, he's our official, unofficial, but I'll extend the olive branch, official if you'd like to be, statistician if you'd like.
There it is.
At the very least.
But anyway, 10K, he put two lists on there of just his requests. Good, quote unquote, good movies.
And quote unquote bad movies.
And so we asked two friends / family members.
Yes.
We asked Chewy to choose a good movie. And we asked my sister Emily to choose a bad movie.
So Chewy's going first.
Out of the list.
Because we've been nice so far. But after the nice movie, maybe it turns out we've been naughty. So maybe we'll call it Naughty and Nice Month.
Perfect.
Or Nice and Naughty Month.
Nice and Naughty Month.
That sounds like a movie
bad.
We shouldn't watch on any
That sounds like
month.
A movie we'd watch and Rosie would be like, oh, did Ian pick this one?
Speaking of which, Chewy gave us three choices of movies to watch based off the list. One of them is...
And we narrowed it down.
We narrowed it
to
down.
To one that thematically works with our year.
But
the
also...
movies that we watched
And
this
funnily
year.
Enough, it does work with Naughty and Nice at the same time.
And it's true. And also, it's clearly
and
an
it's,
Ian movie.
It's we're going to go back to the comic book well a little bit, guys. But it'll be okay. Ryan hasn't seen this movie.
It's true.
Make sure the kids are fast asleep.
Sure, yeah.
Because next time, we're going to be watching Deadpool. I only saw it the one time in the movie theater. It was great. I enjoyed it a lot. It was a lot of fun. I think you'll enjoy it. We're gonna have to dance around some of the humor, but we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
So join us next time for our special holiday theme month with our special guest Chewy as we watch Deadpool. So thank you so much for listening to Baby Driver, and join us next time for Deadpool. And remember,
whether it's blockbuster
or lackluster,
we're the Super Action Bros.
This has been a production of the Stuff and Things Podcast Network.
Exclusively at stuffandthingsnetwork.com.